I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex. Welcome back to On Air. Pleasure to have you here. How are you, Dan?
I am great. I'm sitting here with the most amazing view of New York City in 270 degrees. I just see every direction. It's an amazing way to wake up and join you guys. So how are you?
I think New York could eventually be your long-term home. I know people that follow your Oscar and Dan account on Instagram know that you are currently assessing, you know, country by country, city by city, as to where you could end up living. But I do feel you are really comfortable in New York.
I mean, it feels like home every time I land. I just think the problem is that it's so ridiculously expensive here. So the quality of life is not as good as you could get somewhere else. So I realistically see, like, in my 40s or 50s, depending on our financial situation, we could buy an apartment here and then, you know, spend a lot of time here. But it's also not so healthy to live here full time, I think, surrounded by rats and crazy people. And
yeah, no, there is that side to it, isn't there? Anywhere.
And the airlines, and let's not even talk about the airlines.
No, there's plenty of foreign carriers to whisk you off out of there.
Yeah. And to be fair, this is a JetBlue hub, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I was just with someone who was just in New York, and he was saying to me how no matter the trash on the street, the weird steam that comes out of the ground, you know, the all those kind of little tidbits, is like, it's still New York.
You know, I know. That's what's so crazy. Like, people just, you overlook the craziest things when it comes to New York. Yeah. It's like, oh, like, so like, I just saw three rats on my evening walk in Central Park. That's fine. Yeah.
Fewer than the five I saw this time last week. Well, do you know what? Given that we have the perfect way into this story, I think we have to speak about what happened on an SAS flight. I didn't click when I saw this come up because there has been so much going on this week. This week has been extremely busy, and I was in Rome for a few days. Ever since, it's been full on with work. And also, as you know, you are in New York where the UN General Assembly is happening.
Yeah.
Today is the day that all of the head of state and foreign leaders are there. It's the highest level days at the UN. So there's, you know, a hive of activity in terms of what's going on globally, international, geopolitics, aviation, very much involved, blah, blah, blah. So I didn't click, but you did click. What is the story?
It's funny because it's like you see SAS and you're just like, I don't know, I'll save that for Dan.
Scroll up and trust that the co-host is on it.
So, okay, there was a flight on Wednesday last week, so a week from when this comes out. Basically, there was a flight from Oslo to Malaga, quite a long flight, departing in the afternoon. And passengers in SAS Plus, which is like premium economy kind of thing on SAS, get served meals. So that happened very quickly into the flight. And a woman, or at least a passenger, not sure if it was a man or a woman, opens her meal. And as she does, because SAS serves like meal boxes, as she opens the box, a live mouse jumps out of the box and away into the cabin.
I cannot, in English words, explain to you how I would have reacted, because that aircraft, if it didn't need to divert for the mouse, it would have needed to divert for me.
The funny thing is, this is kind of like support for why you don't eat in-flight meals on most airlines, right? I feel like this is perfect evidence to support that choice.
Yeah, I mean, look, these things happen, and I'm always reading about, you know, cockroaches that were found on board, and especially on airlines that are flying to more remote parts of the world or tropical climates and so on. But yeah, you know me, I'm not one for the prepackaged meal anywhere in society, not least on an aircraft. And the fact that this mouse was alive is the other part, you know, because, you know, mistakes happen and there's been, people have found all sorts, haven't they? You know, animals,
little insects
have, yeah, made their way into the catering factories, ended up in a big saucepan of rice, and then it ends up being packaged and someone finds it on Thai Airways 352 3 weeks later, you know? But yeah. the fact that this rodent was alive and well and jumped out at the passenger and then into the cabin. Oh God. So, it's like as if we needed, you know, any other reasons not to fly SAS. But it's
no, but what's so interesting about this, okay, first of all, SAS handled it very well. They immediately diverted to Copenhagen. Yeah. And the interesting thing is,
do you think people were surprised to hear that? Because people messaged me saying they divert, and I was responding, of course they diverted. It is standard procedure. You can't have a live animal in an aircraft cabin.
Well, a live animal that's not someone's pet, I guess. But apparently,
unless it's but they don't care. I mean, SAS, you can't take a pet on board, can you? Can you take those annoying little dogs?
I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's some pets you can bring on. I've never thought about that on SAS personally, but apparently the company procedure. Wait, I just have to say the thing that makes them have to divert in the case of a mouse is that there's a risk of electrical wiring being chewed because a mouse can go anywhere.
Yes. Of course, that is the risk. When what I was going to say was, I remember a couple of British Airways flights were forced to be cancelled after a passenger said he saw a mouse, and they have to take it incredibly seriously and find it, and they couldn't, so they cancelled the flight. Because the risk of a mouse finding its way into avionics and then chewing through cables that can ultimately, you know, determine whether or not the flight is going to proceed in a safe and stable manner, it's a risk.
I mean, but that makes me think about the thousands of aircraft that sit on the ground for hours in the most remote place, like, anywhere all around the world with their doors open at a jetway or their doors open at some remote stand while they're being maintained or catered or whatever it is during a long layover. You know, at Heathrow, you constantly see, like on a sunny day, a Qantas A380, for example, with all its doors open as it sits there all and stairs leading
up. It does sit there all day.
So you're just like, there's for sure thousands of mice at Heathrow, like guaranteed with all those catering kitchens.
You know,
kitchens.
Concorde at Heathrow, the Concorde that is parked, apparently it was absolutely infested with rats.
You know, that makes me think, I just watched Ratatouille. You know, when they, like, when he enters the kitchen and all the mice have broken in. And there's just
That film.
Yeah, I love it too. So it's honestly really surprising that this, first of all, that people don't find mice on flights. And I don't think anyone is suspecting here that catering somehow was like, oops, a mice fell into the food, let's close the box and serve it. But the mice was probably either in the catering cart or had snuck on the aircraft and seen, ooh, or smelled food and made its way there, you know? So I just think it's surprising that we don't find mice either having chewed electrical wires more often or actually being hidden on planes, because they're good at hiding.
I know. And I thought, okay, I wonder if this was a hot meal. I don't think it is, right? Because it's like a snack box.
Yeah.
So then I'm thinking, you know, the tiny gaps where it could very easily have just made its way into the, could have been in there all along from where it come from, the factory. It's awful. And as you say, these hiding places, I'm going to call this hotel out and I'm going to name it, right? But a couple of months ago, I was staying at Cowarth Park, which is a Dorchester Collection hotel in Ascot, just outside of London. Mm-hmm. It's 5-star. It's super expensive. We're staying there for a while. Every single night on the terrace, which is just, you know, steps away from the inside lobby. So I'm not talking about we were in an outbuilding in the fields, but, you know, just you're in the lobby and you take a step outside and you've got a small terrace with seating. Every night, like clockwork, we watched big mice, not even small, exit from the inside of, you know, the gas heaters, you know, with the flame heaters to keep you warm. Leave from inside there. So basically you heard this like rummaging around in the gas heaters, and then the mice would make their way out from underneath. running around people's feet while they're eating as if normal. Sorry, I didn't find that normal in the slightest. We were eating. I called the staff. I was like, hi. Yeah, there's mice everywhere. Yeah, this is the second night that it's happened. And she was like, "What?" You know, within a split second, you know what she said to me? Well, we've called security and they said they can't do anything.
Oh my God.
But security? She goes to me, yes, and the gardener's not here until tomorrow morning. The gardener's like, I said to her, look, I'm grew up in the countryside, open-minded enough to know that if I was walking out in the fields, okay, then I understand that you're going to come across these kind of things. But I said, I just watched three of them make their way into the lobby. I mean, they're literally checking in.
They Dan, walked up to the front
They came
desk.
From the terrace. They came from the terrace into the. You know what? One of my industry friend / colleagues, Luke, was with me. I know he listens to the podcast. He can vouch for this. We watched them go into the hotel. They go into the hotel, and we said to her, like, these three literally just disappeared towards, you know, the whatever they called the chestnut living room. Right? Yeah. So please, we're not exaggerating, is it? And she was like, well, I don't know what you want me to do. You know, it wasn't, there was just no sense of it. Apparently it was completely normal. I didn't find any of it normal. And I don't find it normal that it's on SAS, but I understand that they dealt with it correctly. And there is that real risk. And as you say, I'm sure this happens a lot more. We just don't know about it.
Yeah. And I just have to talk about the mouse in hotel thing, because when you read, so I'm going to London from New York, so I'm staying at a hotel in New York and then staying in hotels in London, obviously. And when you read reviews of hotels in these major Western cities, like specifically, yeah, I feel London and New York, the reviews are horrifying. It makes you not want to stay anywhere, because
you can
look at like a $500 a night hotel in New York or London. And it's like, I found two cockroaches under my pillow, or it's like there were three mice in the bathroom. And this is like, yeah, nice hotels in central London and New York. And you just feel like, so I have to spend $2,000 a night to ensure that the standard is up to what you get for $70 a night in Thailand or in Malaysia, yeah, you know? That's crazy. So true.
And they hide behind the fact that, you know, these buildings are listed and they're old and it's heritage. So then everything's accepted. I always find that hotels with a lot of heritage and history in there, for example, in the UK, they are Grade 2 listed buildings and they're protected by conservation with heritage and whatever. You see that they use that as the justification to be completely unhygienic and dirty. Dust everywhere, everything, you know, but things are not properly maintained because it all hides behind this concept of it being old. And I'm like, I understand it being old, but also it's filthy.
You know?
And that is also a very common thing. In that scenario, I would rather, you know, wood floor, Premier Inn style, clean, you know, where wall meets floor and not these holes everywhere that they haven't bothered to fill because it's all part of the look. I'm like, no, it's not part of the look and the aesthetic of the place. It's just unhygienic in some scenarios. You can have a 500-year-old building and also be incredibly clean and spotless. That's another reason why I hate carpets in the room. We've spoken about that before. Carpets and thick curtains, they just don't bother to clean them because it doesn't look dirty, so they don't.
I know. And then you look at your socks or whatever when you've been walking around and you get horrified thinking what's on the floor. And this is the same. We've spoken about this before with airlines, where I feel especially like airlines in the West try to use not having clean planes as an excuse for, like, actually, as opposed to airlines in Asia and the Middle East, we need to operate our planes profitably. So we don't have time to clean them between every flight. And it's like, you know that Qatar Airways has one of the highest aircraft utilizations in the world, and they manage to have their aircraft spotless between every flight. This is such a incredibly poor excuse. And then sometimes you're boarding a plane that's been sitting at Heathrow for 22 hours after arriving from Hong Kong the previous day, and it's like still filthy. So you're saying no one had time to clean, do some basic vacuuming in here?
I know. It's just, the hygiene thing will just never be, unfortunately, I just don't think it's a priority for so much of the West, which I just can't understand why that is either accepted or tolerated or whatever, if systematic, if it's within society. But you're so right. We, you know, I was just in Rome for a few days now and had two very good flights with British Airways, and the flight was late coming back from Rome because of the weather in Heathrow. They put like a temporary suspension on departures because of storms, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, of course, the turnaround in Rome was super tight, and the pilot wanted to ensure that we got out and caught up time because we were around 90 minutes behind schedule, and I had a connection to the Middle East, so I was a bit worried about my connection as well. So appreciated the effort that he put in, and the crew did a really good job. Again, though, that comes at a cost. The plane was filthy, absolutely filthy, because God knows when it was last clean, but I could tolerate it. I'm all right. My area wasn't filthy. Dettol wipes, you know, 5 minutes before departure, everything's situated and clean, and then I can relax.
Have you thought about starting to bring one of those handheld vacuums to level up that cleaning?
I haven't, but don't give me ideas. That Amazon basket of mine at 2 a.m.
You board a plane and you see Alex vacuuming his...
It doesn't seem like the most, you know, unthinkable scenario.
No, not at all.
It doesn't.
Okay, let's get into some of the real news.
Yeah, what we wanted to discuss on today's episode. So did you see the comments from the Air France CEO in the interview that he gave to one of the national newspapers in the Netherlands?
So Air France KLM CEO, right?
Sorry, yes, the Air France KLM CEO, Ben Smith, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I did see this. And this, so the background here is that Qatar Airways has been granted a bunch of additional slots across the EU, including at Amsterdam. So they'll be increasing their flights from 10 weekly to 14 weekly, in other words, twice a day. And the funny thing is, if you look at the schedule of these flights, they depart like 20 minutes apart, both from Doha and from Amsterdam, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're very concentrated at this one bank time for Qatar Airways, but they have several others. So presumably they're not getting slots. But let's just say Air France KLM is not so pleased with these four additional weekly flights from Qatar Airways, right?
And this was, I mean, this was, so he had given the interview, Ben Smith, he's CEO of Air France KLM, to one of the Dutch nationals, as we highlighted. And I'll read you what he had said. He said, quote, knowing that Qatar Airways will be increasing their flights at Amsterdam from 10 to 14, he described their situation as painful. He said that the world is upside down, pointing that there is unfair competition because KLM does not even fly directly to Doha. They understood that the expansion is as a result of the Open Skies Agreement that the EU has with Qatar and other states, whereby there is that Open Skies Agreement. It's very, very liberal. It means that they can operate a ton of flights. That was back in 2021, so it's nothing new. That went through all of the checks and measures in order to have both parties from both countries sit down and sign that agreement. It is already something that has been debated. It is something that has been, you can imagine, the EU is an incredibly bureaucratic place. So for this to have even got over the line, it was a lengthy process, right? Air France KLM CEO claiming that it's unfair because of now passengers will most likely choose to fly with Qatar Airways on routes that otherwise KLM would be operating direct, and also that there is a regulation that is imposed on Dutch airlines but that foreign airlines like Qatar don't have to adhere to, and that they were questioning the agreement with the EU that has already been in place. I didn't like any of this, and I will tell you why. And I think, you know, firstly, Ben Smith described Qatar Airways' expansion into Amsterdam from 10 to 14 weekly flights as painful. That is painful. And that the world is upside down. Believe me, the world is upside down for many reasons right now. But going from 10 flights to 14 flights on a Gulf carrier is not the reason why the world is upside down. No. Secondly, the reason that I had, you know, took issue with this is that his team and he, as the CEO, have chosen to make this interview with the National Paper to start riling up this rhetoric as to KLM or the Dutch aviation industry is under threat by these Qatar flights that are going from 10 to 14 weekly. And so they're chosen to do this interview with a national paper. They're chosen for him to speak only about this, by the way. The interview wasn't about anything else, okay? Yet, what Ben Smith decided not to describe as painful or justifies the world being upside down is Cathay Pacific's immense expansion, including into big US gateways, Ethiopian Airlines announcing plans to fly between Addis Ababa and Rome from daily to 10 weekly from December, increasing frequencies from Delta to the likes of every European city, it's specifically across Italy from the US. Frequencies, for example, between Atlanta and Rome are going to 17 weekly, in addition to increase in new flights from Atlanta and Boston and Detroit to other cities across Europe. American Airlines announcing a whole bunch of new routes for Europe in 2025, including the return of routes that they used to fly before the pandemic. Air France themselves expanding their network for the next year to serve a new total of almost 170 destinations in 73 countries, including an entire new range of long-haul destinations, Kilimanjaro, Salvador de Bahia in Brazil, Manila, Male in the Maldives, extending and increasing its frequencies in the US, launching new flights across Europe to the likes of Kiruna in Sweden, for example.
Oh, look
they
at that.
They didn't describe it as painful or the world is upside down when they knew that British Airways will operate a record number of flights to the US, Canada and Mexico next summer. More than 400 direct weekly flights between their London hubs and North America. They didn't describe any of this as a threat to the aviation sector in Europe, to the aviation sector in the Netherlands, or to KLM. But it's that age-old thing of taking a Gulf carrier, looking at how they've expanded slightly from 10 to 14, pointing at them and saying, that's the reason why we're a bad airline, or that's the reason why we're struggling, or we're not profitable. It is BS.
It is crazy, especially considering that Emirates flies three times a day from Dubai to Amsterdam already. So what's the difference? And I feel like, the one valid point in what he said here, which, again, I think it's quite irrelevant given that we're seeing only four additional weekly flights, but they do discuss, so here's a quote, unions are concerned about the unequal competition that this expansion entails. This is the relevant part coming up, especially given the lower labor standards at Qatar Airways compared to European airlines. Dutch politics is criticized for imposing annoying regulations on the national aviation industry while granting competitors such as Qatar Airways ample access. So I see a tiny point there, which they could make if they didn't choose to make it just in this case about labor standards and labor costs being different at the likes of Air France, KLM, and in the Middle East. But that applies to every airline flying to Amsterdam, whether it's Singapore Airlines or Cathay Pacific or Ethiopian. The labor standards are just different in the Middle East and Asia and Africa. And that's something
that this is it you're talking about. Isn't this something?
Here.
Isn't this something that is a he's to, that's a worldwide issue, not about aviation. That's just society. That's country by country differences. That in that scenario, is that not a conversation where that conversation is rather Ben Smith, the CEO of Air France KLM, highlighting how France as a nation has a different standard when it comes to the setup of unions and labor rights as other countries. I mean, breaking news, 192 states on earth, they're all not the same.
This is exactly.
This is something that is a new idea or a new concept.
It's just four additional flights means about 1,000 additional seats per week to a country that gets millions of tourists. I don't think this is anything to be too concerned about. And if KLM wants to fly to Doha, I don't see anything stopping them. But there aren't really many non-Qataris partners flying there. So
is that the irony is that if KLM wanted to start flights to Doha, just like all of the other airlines that are here, they'd probably, well, no, they would certainly be welcome with open arms and also generous packages. And that's why you have almost every One World Alliance airline operating to Doha. And also all of the Chinese carriers are now launching new flights to the hub because they want to be able to tap into all of the transfer traffic. And in that sense, Qatar operates pretty liberally in even partnering up with those that are not, for example, in the One World Alliance, in having them catch a lot of the flow from, for example, the West, and other carriers take them East. And in fact, it even does Qatar a favor in some scenarios because of the fleet shortage and whatever. So in that sense, they're really liberal. But this age old, you know, this just reminded me of the tactics that the US carriers used to play back in the 2014, 2015, 2016 days, where they used to cry to the White House that the reason why their airlines were so rubbish is because Emirates, Etihad and Qatar existed. And then finally, they woke up to the realization that none of it was true, and that actually, since they couldn't beat them, they were going to join them. And that's why you've got all of these US carriers very much in bed with much of the Middle East carriers right now, because they've realized that it's better for business, better for passengers, and better for a more connected, globalized society, as air travel makes the world a smaller place for the transfer and flow of passengers and goods and whatever. I just thought this was such a... clearly I'm wound up by this, but not... The bit that I specifically wonder is why hasn't another carrier been mentioned that operates with a significance or a greater footprint in the Netherlands? Is this that weird kind of age-old systematic thing where, that's the airline that wins all the awards, so we'll just cry about them? I try to understand why.
Yeah, I feel like partly... The timing of this is interesting because Air France just announced that they're cutting flights to Abu Dhabi, which they launched in partnership with Etihad. So they were going to operate once daily. Etihad was going to operate once daily between Paris and Abu Dhabi. And Air France was shuttling a lot of people onto Etihad's network. So they were like, okay, we're joining them in this hub and spoke Middle East model. But now they've decided to pull out, and Etihad is instead expanding their capacity in Paris. Conveniently, they're not talking about Etihad now increasing capacity by double to Paris because they're partners with Air France KLM, but they are pretty much in the exact same position as Qatar Airways. And if you were to criticize any airlines for the way they're impacting aviation and prices in Europe, it should definitely be Chinese airlines, because if you check any long-haul business class tickets from Europe to East Asia, by far the cheapest at a completely uncompetitively low price is always Chinese carriers. And they are operating to all over Europe, the most obscure routes that don't have enough demand to operate direct, but they're trying to just pick up passengers to connect to all over East Asia. They're also using Russian airspace, which is another huge competitive advantage that European airlines don't have access to.
Where are the headlines about that? Why are they not pointing to the Chinese carriers and crying foul and saying they are dumping capacity into the market? They have unsustainably low fares, sometimes 50% cheaper to fly the same route in business with a Chinese carrier. And they have access to Russian airspace, which they don't. I guess what? It's not sexy enough?
Exactly. And not to mention, they also have far worse labor laws than in Europe. But I think it partly comes down to the geopolitics and how it's not, you know, maybe the Netherlands and a company that represents so much of France and the Netherlands wants to be like, hey, we, you know, go out very publicly against Chinese airlines. But it's easy to, you know, pick on Qatar or the UAE or some country that, yes, they're powerful, but on a global stage, they're not China. So it's easy to go after their airlines instead.
I think you make a really valid point. And again, we have to remember how these comments come about. There is a team involved, right, with the CEO of one of Europe's most important airline groups who make decisions as to whether or not their CEO is going to be the one to speak to which network. Are we going for a more right-wing paper or more left-wing? Are we doing digital? Are we doing online? Are we doing TV straight down the middle, a business, a CNBC, a Bloomberg or whatever? To go to one of the papers in the Netherlands and only comment on this, I think we might be witnessing the beginning of what they hope will be some kind of initially subtle, maybe then not so subtle campaign to get the market questioning as to whether or not there should be, you know, this footprint of Middle East airlines. Some seemingly they're not worried, as we said, about the Asian carriers, but Middle Eastern airlines coming in and operating and taking all these passengers. When it probably comes down to this, most of the passengers that have the choice to fly the same routes with a highly awarded airline with an immense reputation, like, for example, Singapore Airlines, or with Air France KLM, in most scenarios, given the choice, they're going to go with my first option. And that is nothing to do with them being priced out, you know, unfairly competing, whatever. In many scenarios, it's just to do with the fact that the other airline is a better airline. Mm-hmm. And passengers end up choosing that. Of course, the majority of passengers are selecting their fares based on price. So there is a really valid argument to be had on the way, for example, many Chinese carriers are pricing out the competition. But that's not the conversation, funnily enough, Ben Smith is having.
Yeah, yeah. Really interesting. So speaking of Chinese carriers and travel in that region, there's another really interesting story from this week about a Cathay Pacific seat recline incident turned very unpleasant. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I saw this. So in a nutshell, you have a passenger who very much within her right decides to recline, and she notes that it's not the meal service time. And when she starts to recline, the couple behind her start shouting and kicking off and then verbally abusing her, shaking her chair, demanding and insisting that she puts her seat in the upright position. She declines. She says she's within her right to recline, as are they, and therefore she will not be placing her seat in the upright position. And they go for it, and it all kicks off. And I think the crew were involved when they started to get racist, right? And started to get a little bit, you know, into territory that can be dangerous when you're in the confines of an aircraft cabin.
Yeah, but the thing is that the crew actually cited... So the context, which is what makes this kind of interesting, is that the woman reclining was from mainland China. So she's a PRC, while the passengers behind her were from Hong Kong. So, you know...
And the flight was from Hong Kong to London.
Yeah, exactly. So the context here, of course, is that... Well, you guys know what's going on with Hong Kong and China. Obviously, yeah. A lot of people in Hong Kong are upset about it. So there's all these incidents taking
and
place
vice
in
versa,
Hong Kong.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but so there's all these incidents taking place on a daily basis in Hong Kong where people act out their aggression towards people from PRC. But this, in this case, this passenger went to the cabin crew and said, I'm being harassed by the passengers behind me. Help me out. And the crew sided with the couple instead, saying,
which was
actually,
really disappointing. Didn't they ask her? So they asked
just
her
put your
to
seat
return
upright.
Her seat to the upright position. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is so crazy because I don't remember if we've said this on the podcast, as we mentioned last or 2 weeks ago. It's getting hard to remember exactly. But the discussion on whether you can recline or not in economy class, of course you are allowed to recline. Respectfully, maybe check with the person behind you to see that you're not crushing their laptop by just quickly reclining, or maybe that they're not eating, but it is within your right to recline. So the crew should always side with the person who's trying to recline if they're behaving nicely.
And interestingly, she declined. When the crew told her, you should put your seat in the upright position, she said no, she is within her right. And so she didn't. All of this, okay, eventually blows over and the situation goes viral, especially across mainland China. And now Cathay have banned the couple for harassing the individual. And she's really sweet about it. And she says, you know, she even notes that she doesn't want this to go down as, you know, evidence that we can't have unity in the confines of an aircraft cabin when you have two people from an opposing side of some kind of, you know, diplomatic issue or conflict or whatever. And she was really sweet about it. But also, I like the fact that she knows she is within her right to recline. She even went back to the crew with that. And later, when it had calmed down and Cathay had then seen this go viral, the couple were issued a ban for life from Cathay Pacific.
That's tough. If you live in Hong Kong, to be banned from Cathay Pacific.
Right. You don't this is have funny because choice. On my flight from Rome to London, I was sitting in the middle because I let my friend Emmy take the aisle seat and my sister Demi take the window so that she could sleep. So it was fine. The middle is totally fine if you know both passengers next to you and you're comfortable. So, and about an hour into the flight, it's only a 2-hour flight, but I did start to feel it. I was like, oh, you know, it would be good if I could recline a little bit, but it is a short haul. So I'm saying to Emmy, like, can I recline? Like, is there someone behind me? I didn't want to obviously look because I'm going to come face to face with someone. She was like, what? So I took her phone and I wrote in her notes, can you tell me if there's someone behind me? Describe them. Tell me if, you know, maybe if they've got their laptop out. Just tell me who is behind me, if they are awake or asleep, you know, because I'm thinking about reclining. She spends ages typing on her phone and then she turns the phone around and it just says, nobody. There's no one behind. I was like, there's nobody behind me. Yes. Like reclining within 0.1 of a second.
Yeah. You know? That is a nice feeling when there's no one behind you. Of course, I do. It's weird because also before the podcast, I used to be like, yeah, I'll recline. But I feel like now I'm so conscious of every intricacy of every topic that I'm like, but do I have to recline? Do I want to, you know, potentially?
Do you think it's because we come on and talk about all this stuff every week? And every scenario that happens globally, do you think we're just so hyper aware of it now? That because I've always been under the impression that you probably don't need to recline on a short haul flight.
Yeah, you don't. But of course, it's comfortable if you have the choice.
If you're tall like me or even taller like you.
Yeah, cute. But next week, so we're saving this for next week, but there was an incident with Virgin Atlantic where... that, you know, I called you about where I ended up in economy class on a very long flight. The reason we're going to talk
can
about
I
it
tell
next
you,
week.
Your text message stopped me in your tracks and we're going to hear about this in depth next week because there's some crazy shit that happens to my co-host, right?
Yeah.
But you text me and I didn't see it because I'm guarding my phone in my pocket for my life because I was near to the Trevi Fountain, right? So I'm, you know, got the tightest grip. So eventually away from the crowds and the chaos and we're walking to a lunch, take my phone out and I see like 14 text messages from you. I'm like, oh my God, crisis. I open it and you're like, you will not believe what has happened with Virgin Atlantic. I think I just replied to you, no bleeping way.
Yeah.
Without even knowing what has happened, I couldn't believe for him to have reacted like that, something had happened. I'm looking forward to hearing the details because I don't even know them. I only know the condensed version and tried to give you as much advice as I could.
Yeah, exactly. So by next week, the video from this will be up, which is why I just want to wait so that people can reference
that. Wow,
that's
a quick turnaround.
Another video?
I might be. So it can be done, Dan, because, well, now that you bring it up, and I didn't want to have to mention this, but I think I will. In June, Dan and I took a flight together, right? And Dan has made a video, and he has been, I'm like a puppy with a treat in front of me because, you know, I enjoy Dan's videos, but I think I'll also enjoy, well, I hope I'll enjoy the one that I'm in as well. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be up next month. He's been telling me that in June, July, nothing appeared. In August, nothing appeared. And now here we are on the last days of September and there's still nothing. But mashallah, the Virgin Atlantic video is being published within the week. Wow.
Okay, just to excuse or, you know, give myself some leniency here. The reason is that the first part of this video was recorded in February. So I've been waiting.
Is that with the first Virgin flight?
Yeah, exactly. So I've been waiting, and you guys on the podcast might remember I spoke about flying Virgin in February, and the video still has not come out because I was waiting to take the second flight. So go figure, I've tried several times, and without spoiling too much what happened, I just ended up taking an 8-hour flight, transatlantic in economy, that was not intended, and I was sitting there debating, should I recline or not? And in the end,
That's not the story. The story is how you ended up there.
Oh, for sure. That is not the story. But going back to what we were talking about, I was like, should I recline or not? And of course, I wanted to recline. But in the end, the flight was quite empty. So I ended up moving to an empty aisle seat so that I could recline and wouldn't bother
Dan,
the people sitting next
Dan,
to me.
Dan, you are a good person. Okay. Because the day you had... And that we will hear about.
I know.
Okay. The fact you then boarded at the end of that day and were sitting there in a Civil War debate in your head at 38,000 feet as to whether or not you should have reclined. I don't even know how you hadn't passed out by that point. Of course you should have reclined. And if anyone wanted to challenge it, you could have sent them to me because I knew what had happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And nobody needed that recline of an extra inch more than you. So that's kind of sweet,
I just recline the seat, and as I do, I hand them a post-it note with your phone number.
Literally, like, send them
call
to me.
This.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Oh, boy.
Look, on a slightly more serious topic before we wrap up, I want to note, because there is a lot going on, of course, with the escalations in the conflict that have now taken place in Lebanon and continue to take place, including the capital city, Beirut, and the surrounding areas. There is a lot of disruption to people's lives. There is a lot of risks and ultimately instability, uncertainty in regards to the safety of people, of human beings. And it's all really, really awful that it's once again kicking off in such an escalated manner. This is happening at the same time that the UN are convening, as I said, with almost every head of state on earth at the General Assembly. We'll see what that does or if it helps or not. But from an aviation perspective, it is important to note that as we go to air this week and this episode reaches your feeds, there are tons of airlines that have been forced to suspend all flights to Beirut. They include Emirates, Etihad, Qatar, Air Arabia, Fly Dubai, Royal Jordanian, Iraqi Airways, Middle East Airlines have cut much of their schedule, in addition to Turkish Airlines, Air France, Swiss, Lufthansa, British Airways, Ethiopian, and many, many more. It is particularly difficult for those who are trying to leave, because there are many trying to leave. There are traffic jams that are extending several hours. People are in the wrong places. And it's all just really, really uncertain. But it is, again, having that direct impact on aviation and the ramifications of that spread across the smaller airlines, the larger airlines, and then, of course, people who are trying to navigate their way across or around the region. I think what is likely as well, Dan, by the time this episode goes to air, is that we're going to see a few more areas added to the kind of no-fly zone map, at least temporarily, as airlines choose to avoid regions with escalated conflict. I don't know if the end is in sight. We live, as many do, in hope for peace and stability, but that is the development as we go to your podcast feeds now. All of this may have changed by the time you listen to it.
Yeah, we monitor the situation and just hope for the best for everyone's safety, and of course for people's ability to be able to leave the country if they wish or go back to their family and relatives. So with that, let's jump into Q&A.
Okay, I've got a good question here from David. He's got in touch via Instagram. He says, "Hi Alex, a question for the podcast. I'm sitting in the Emirates lounge at Johannesburg listening to the podcast, wine in hand, hoping for an upgrade to first. It doesn't get much better." David, we agree. He says, "Looking at the array of aircraft and airlines here, it led me to wonder, and maybe we can answer, what airports do we think have the greatest variety of aircraft type and airlines?" David goes on to say, "I reckon Johannesburg must be up there, A380s, 350s, 340s, 330s, 320s, 747s, 777s, 737s, and a host of little planes from African carriers. All the European players, the Middle East trio, Qantas, Singapore, and pretty much every African airline. Can any other airport beat this? David asks.
I love this question.
Very observant and a great question. I've been thinking about this ever since I opened his message about 5 days ago.
So you've had a little more time to think than me. Tell me what you think.
Well, okay. The bit that I think nowhere else can beat in that sense is the fact that all of the African carriers are, not all, but almost all, are also there. So there's a significant number of African carriers that are there that would otherwise not be present in any other market. So that's where I think, yeah, that almost sounds a bit unbeatable. The same could be said for the like, you know, hubs, the likes of Sao Paulo, but even Heathrow, I was thinking, you can have the little Logan Air prop behind the A380 in front of the 777 with a 74. Yeah. And, you know, so you have a massive, massive reach at the likes of these big hubs like London Heathrow. I thought South America and the hubs like Sao Paulo could be an example of all of the Latin American, South American carriers that would otherwise not be elsewhere with a variation of aircraft. Then I thought about how the likes of, if we're looking at aircraft variation, places like Atlanta would have loads because you've got these tiny little things that are doing, going to, flying to places that I only ever seen TV movies like, oh, this is a nonstop service to Pebble Beach. I'm like, is that a real
place? So true.
Okay. Is that a beach or an airport? When you say Pebble Beach, I think of a runway made of stones, but anyway, yeah. with sand and sea. So, but then they don't get the foreign carriers. So in terms of, you know, colors and airlines, they are not all there. Not even many of them are there. So I don't know. I actually think it requires more thought.
No, but here's the thing about Heathrow. There's no way Heathrow is like that because you see like a couple ATRs a day from Logan Air. But as far as I know, there are no scheduled Dash 8s. There are no smaller planes
not since
than that
Flybe
for sure.
Went bust. Yeah.
Yeah. Embraer, you know, 135s, 145s.
No, we don't get Embraers.
No. CRJs, no. Extremely rare. So,
a lot used to send an Embraer. I don't know if they still do.
A 190 or 195. Yeah. But
yeah, because I've flown on it between London and Warsaw. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it is interesting. I would say that Johannesburg must be up there with, you know, in terms of having such a wide range of destinations.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think you're right also about Sao Paulo. It's going to be cities that are, you know, big, but also in quite remote areas. That's the kind of criteria we're looking for, where they would also have flights to all types of tiny places. I'm thinking also perhaps something like, well, no, Manila is a very busy airport.
But not in terms of variation. I mean, you're not seeing, for example, many European carriers go there direct.
Exactly.
Yeah, this definitely got me thinking. I thought it was a great question. And I love the fact that this question was with wine in hand, a podcast on business class waiting for a first class upgrade. I don't think it gets much better for David.
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely. Because obviously something like Dubai or Doha don't see those types of small aircraft that you're looking for to see diversity.
No, that's why I was thinking more US or Asia or even South America. But then where else gets the African carriers and the ERJ-145s, for example?
Exactly.
You know, or the A330-800neos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof, that is
a
great
question. We need to have a think. It was a really good
Actually, we would love if our viewers tuned in, I would say, because I'm sure they have some good ideas. I could also imagine something like...
Listeners.
What did I say? Viewers.
Yeah, you're in your YouTube
I'm used
mode.
To that. But also something like even Bali gets a huge range of...
Yeah,
they have everything
true.
From the A380 to tiny little props. So
tiny little things where I think the elastic band is what's holding everything together.
Yeah, yeah. And they have a bunch of really ancient aircraft too, like 737-300s and 500s. And of course,
Male with the sea aircraft, the amphibian.
Yeah, that's another one, except they don't get...
Amphibian. God.
Yeah, except they don't get like A380s, and it doesn't have that huge range of size. It's just that a 777 in the Maldives looks like a flying skyscraper, which it kind of is, but...
Yeah. I know, but it is funny when you see them in the wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Xavier asks us if we think airlines should offer a show for passengers on board, and he sent me a video of AirAsia cabin crew doing like karaoke from the forward galley and everyone's videoing. I also want to thank Axel for getting in touch with screenshots showing that he has followed and reviewed the podcast, which is always great to see because that's how other people discover the podcast and we continue to build this community. Thank you, Axel. You are officially entered into the draw that we will be conducting in a few weeks where a business or first class amenity kit could be coming your way. Stay tuned for more details there.
Awesome. So here's a good question from Thomas. He asks, I love the podcast. It's the highlight of always the highlight of my week. Wow, that's so sweet. I wanted to hear you and Alex's opinions on the best transit hubs in each region. I can start because I'm always transiting all over the place.
Yeah.
If you're okay with that.
Of course.
So in Europe, I love Helsinki Airport, but it is a bit out of the way for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I also think Copenhagen Airport is great. I think many of the good airports in Europe are in Scandinavia, to be honest.
Yeah.
As you said, Rome for non-Schengen is quite smooth. I remember transiting there non-Schengen earlier this year.
It's great.
I was literally just let out into the terminal and could walk 2 minutes to my connecting gate. But
I bumped into my friend Renee in transit in Rome.
Just randomly.
just yep, we were. Yep. She was in transit coming from Nice to Rome to Doha. And I'm doing Rome, London, Doha. And there we both were in transit. Yeah. Renee's a listener to the podcast. She's amazing. And there she was. We had fun in transit in Rome.
Oh Renee, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay, but go on. Europe, Renee, Rome. Go.
Yeah, I think we can leave it there for Europe because there's so many not
Zurich
great
or
options.
Munich.
Okay, Zurich. Yeah, Munich depends.
Yeah, but they've got sort of that security thing out of Zurich because you still line and one person goes at a time. They haven't figured out the whole five people in parallel.
Exactly. I don't know. Like again, I'm not the biggest Zurich airport fan. As you know, I know some other people love it. For me, Munich is also like fine, but not somewhere I'm like, I can't wait to go there. So what do you have any European ones to add?
No, that was that. Even Barajas in Madrid, I'm like, yeah, okay, great. If you enjoy 10-mile walks and hostel service.
And taking a train that takes like 10 minutes to get from.
God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, Middle East. So I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Because it is. Yeah. Okay.
So
Hamad International Airport for transit, 100%.
Yeah. So my thing is this. Controversial opinion alert. Not so controversial. And I got a lot of comments about this. Yeah. Hamad Airport is not good for transit because two out of three times, you're going to get a bus gate. And when you get a bus gate, if your plane is landing on schedule and you have a 1 hour connection, which a lot of people have, then you're literally spending 20 minutes sometimes on a bus. You have to then clear transit security, which if you're in economy can take ages because it can be incredibly busy at peak times. And then you get on another bus for 20 minutes. So I love that airport. I think it's fantastic. And that's why I often try to break up my trip to visit you or just stay in a hotel overnight. But for back-to-back connections, I just feel like as far as global hubs go, there's elements that add so much unnecessary stress. And I'm so excited.
It's the bus thing, as you said.
Yeah, it's only the buses. Only the buses. That's the problem.
Okay, fair enough.
So I will say Istanbul is huge, but...
Ooh. Unnecessarily long walks.
Yeah. And another thing about Istanbul is you can land on time and then taxi for 40 minutes and get to your gate 40 minutes late. So, okay, not great. But Abu Dhabi Airport, I'll say again, it's small. They have more gates than Etihad has flights at any time of the day. So you're pretty much sure you're always going to get a jetway. And it's quite, it's just efficient to get around. Dubai, no, not good for transit either. Mm. That's the problem with these mega airports. And when you see, like, I remember interviewing Oman Air's CEO. Oh, Muscat, amazing for transit.
Oh, Muscat's pretty decent for transit, yeah.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, interviewing...
It's also a bit sleepy.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember they're interviewing their CEO in 2017. So the guy who was their CEO back then. And he was saying...
Oman,
like,
Air
the,
CEO or Oman Airport CEO?
Oman Air's CEO. And he was saying, you know, Oman the Air, selling point...
Abdulaziz Al Raisi.
No, no, no. Back then at it was the a Dutch guy.
Oh, you mean before Abdulaziz?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Abdulaziz is no longer there anymore.
Okay. Yeah, they've gone through a lot of changes. But
yeah,
back then... that might even have been before they opened the new terminal, but he was saying, you know, here you have 10 flights landing in an hour on 737s and a few 787s, and it's nice and calm. In Dubai, you'll have 25 A380s landing in an hour. So you'll have literally tens of thousands of people. And the same sort of applies in Doha, except you'll have like 40 wide bodies landing in an hour. And there's so many people walking through that it's just unlike any other airports in the world. The level that these airlines bank their schedules to allow for connections are unlike anything else, which make for very convenient connections, but also a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Okay, Asia. Moving on to Asia.
Singapore and Hong Kong, I would say, are
for me, it's Singapore for sure. Yeah,
but Hong Kong is also, there can be long walks, but it's a beautiful, underrated airport, I feel.
True. And beautiful lounges as well.
Yeah. What about Africa? Australia? Oh, Africa.
Oh, okay, we're going to go that way. Okay, we'll come back. Okay, go on. We'll keep it going. So we'll go that way around. Okay, Australia. Well, you know, Australasia, Oceania.
Yeah. Melbourne is good, I feel. Sydney is not good.
Yeah, Melbourne, I agree. Airport. Yeah. Particularly get stressed out on the morning wave of flights that connect like Melbourne with Sydney, and the queues were just insane and everyone was like, yeah, and it was as if it was the first time they'd ever done domestic operations, and yet apparently every Monday is like that. So
Auckland,
yeah, Melbourne over Sydney for sure.
Auckland is great down there if we're talking about Oceania. North America, none. Stay away. Transit.
Yeah, I would not transit. Montreal. I transit via Montreal if I had to choose in North America.
So here's something
I don't... It has decent connectivity.
Yeah. Here's something I don't know about Canada, which I'm embarrassed to admit. Do you need a Canadian visa to transit in Canada? Maybe you don't know.
I do know because neither I checked this for a friend. And I think... Oh, but I'm scared to give the wrong answer. I think, yes.
We don't have to know, but...
No,
the thing,
no.
Because, so in the US, you have to have a US visa to transit, even internationally, and you have to take your bags out and recheck them, even on the same ticket, even if your bag's tag says New Orleans and you're landing in New York, you still have to collect it. It's the worst place on earth to connect flights. So that's why British Airways has it all figured out, because if they can fly to dozens of cities in the US and let people from all over the world connect in London instead, where they don't have to collect their bags and fly direct to wherever they're going in the US, that's definitely the way to do it if you can.
So I was checking. I just went back to my text to see what I texted my friend. Yes, you need a transit visa to transit in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
to be fair,
you need that visa before boarding the flight to Canada.
To be fair, some nationalities also need those types of things to transit, even in the EU, which is, know, we don't think about that. But yeah, it's just the added headache of having to collect your bag for no reason.
Okay. So that's North America. South America?
South America, I'm trying to think.
I'm unqualified to comment on South America.
I mean, I've been to a lot of places.
If I had to make a decision.
But I've only really transferred in Sao Paulo. In Central America, I've transferred in Panama, but most of them it's been like arriving, getting out, and then returning to the airport a week later. So I can't really say, but I do know Sao Paulo is not great for connections.
Africa? I guess we've got three choices, right? Addis, Nairobi, Kigali.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider Cairo and Casablanca and stuff as well.
Oh, yeah,
but
true.
All of those airports you just mentioned are not good. I haven't transferred in Kigali, but the airport itself is not great. And all the others I have transferred in, and it's a big no for me. Major avoid.
I remember transferring in Addis Ababa, and I was thinking, this is not...
Not it. Not,
yeah, it was just stressful. So, so stressful. Unnecessarily.
Yeah, and know? Talk and, about and an
everyone
airport
else
with...
is incredibly stressed as well, so it just ups the overall stress.
Yeah, I mean, at least if you're going to go to an airport with a lot of bus gates, Addis Ababa has that as well. Go to Doha, which has a beautiful airport with great restaurants and shopping and everything. Once you get inside in Addis Ababa, you'll get a bus gate 2 out of 3 times as well, if not more.
With no AC.
And the terminal looks like it's the roof is about to collapse, so...
I don't think it just looks like it.
But Ethiopian is actually an underrated airline in terms of onboard experience. Also, it's just the airport needs to need some rehabilitation.
True, true. Well, look, we will reconvene, all being well, this time next week. Thank you very much for being part of the podcast and for joining us as you do. We are also delighted that we are continuing to climb in the podcast global rankings, and we'll have more news on that in next week's episode. And our number one platform for the listeners continues to be Spotify. So thank you guys for joining us, whether it's on Spotify or on any other platforms, wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to seeing you next week, same time, same place. You know the drill.
Yeah, it's such a highlight of every week, as we say all the time, whether we're halfway across the world from each other, as we are now, midnight, midday, we always look forward to it. So we can't wait to see you all next week, where we'll be sharing the juicy story and discussing what happened to me on Virgin Atlantic. And hopefully, in my upcoming 3 flights before next week's episode, nothing else goes wrong.
And let's start a countdown, guys. Let's count how many further days Dan is going to continue to avoid to upload that video, the one I told you about from June. So consider this your private little countdown with me. We'll start logging it from today's date, and we'll continue from here on out.
Yeah, you know what the problem is? I'm trying to find an editor I can hire to edit that video exactly how I want it, because I have some specific requests for the video.
I am texting my lawyer now. If you think you are going to give me a bad edit, think again. Unbelievable.
I want like an expert in deepfake, you know, so they can...
Nasty, nasty, nasty. Well, look, I'm going to go now. Definitely on that note, I'm signing off. Have a good rest of your morning there in New York, and I wish you a very good evening.
Have a great day, you and everyone, our beloved listeners. See you next week on air. Bye-bye.
It's easy to create your dream kitchen with Clearview Cabinetry at Menards. With multiple finishes to choose from, you'll be sure to find a style that fits perfect for you. Clearview Cabinetry offers features like soft closed doors and drawers as standard and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Explore Clearview's cabinet options and start designing today in store or on Menards.com, where you can find more of our great deals going on now. Save